Ever feel like you're doing this teaching thing alone? You don't have to be. Share teaching is all about sharing the workload through the power of collaboration and teamwork. Together, we'll walk through all the difficult parts of teaching and learn how to streamline our processes, fine-tune our time management, and develop a more manageable workload. If that sounds like a dream come true to you, then welcome to the Shared Teaching Podcast. Let's share in the teaching to make those dreams a reality. Now here's today's Shared Teaching. Welcome to the Shared Teaching Podcast. I have a very special guest today, Dr. Deanna Smith, author of Rooted in Joy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. I'm so excited you were able to come on. I loved watching your presentation this summer. I think it was the Teach Your Heart Out conference.
Yes.
Yes. So you have some amazing tips for general ed teachers and just teachers in general on how to bring back more joy in their classrooms and do it in a sustainable way, which I am really excited and intrigued to hear about.
Yeah. So one of my passion projects is really helping to spread joy and inclusion in classrooms across the country. And that really looks like having joyful and inclusive classroom cultures, but also joyful and inclusive and engaging instructional practices as well. And so that's kind of grown out of my passion. I started really working with culturally responsive teaching and other asset pedagogies. And it kind of grew out of the moment of need that we are in, this season of high stress, a lot of burnout, a lot of fatigue, just kind of a difficult road that lies ahead, not only for teachers, but also for students as well. So it kind of grew out of that passion and became a book. And here I am talking about it with you here today.
Awesome. I'm glad you are. It's such a needed topic. And you are right. Like, we are feeling so overwhelmed and stressed. And the classroom change, I would feel like, pretty drastically ever since we had COVID.
Yeah, I think COVID was really something that illuminated and resurfaced a lot of the problems that were already there. I mean, I don't think we learned a lot new, because there were still, you know, they were the same old challenges. But I think with the spotlight of COVID and the spotlight of inequity, also the mirror that really the social movements were causing us to lift up and look at ourselves, I think it was just a really important time for us to make some shifts in education. And I think a lot of teachers are probably experiencing that some of those much needed shifts haven't really happened yet.
Right.
On the school-based level. And so so I really looked for a way to support teachers with recognizing that, hey, there's also some big structural challenges that are going on, but how can we use our classrooms as small little areas of resistance where we're pushing back and doing what's best for kids?
Right. I love that. So how do we even get started? What's like the first baby steps?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really, you know, it depends on kind of where you're at in your journey. One thing that I've been talking a lot with for teachers as an early step is really just starting with reflection and looking at their own lives and experiences. And I think when we think back on what it was like for us when we were students, or like what we loved about school, or some of the things maybe that even made us want to be a teacher, I think we'll probably find that a lot of those things aren't actually in place in schools anymore, or schools have like really changed and shifted since schools were allowed to really like let kids be kids. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that I invite teachers always to think about too is you are not going to be able to create a joyful and inclusive classroom environment unless you are there yourself, like within yourself. So I think starting with you, starting with what biases you have to unpack, starting with where, you know, are you filling your own cup? Are you joyful? Are you finding like depth and meaning and creativity and opportunities to feel cared for in your own life before coming to the classroom is a really, really great place to start.
Right. I agree. It definitely helps when I mean, it's just like lesson planning. If you don't know what you're doing for the day, then how do you get that across to the kids?
And I actually encourage in my book a lot teachers to think about, you know, inclusion and joy as like things that you're planning for. And I think that it, sometimes people are like, I don't want to like plan, you know, community building or joy. But really, the reality is, you know, if you don't plan it, then it doesn't get done. So I think really using that kind of lens as far as, you know, lesson planning is a great way to look at it.
And I think a lot of us do it in the beginning of the school year, right? We think, oh, they're going to, you know, get to know each other as classmates. And then it just falls off after it's the first few weeks of school.
Yeah, that is definitely a challenge. It's really about making those things habits and sustainable practices more than just like the feel good stuff at the beginning of the year. And when I work with teachers, especially like where, you know, depending on where you are regionally, maybe you're, you might be in like your, you know, fourth week, you might be in like your sixth, seventh week. So, but now we're getting to the time where folks are going to start seeing, I feel like October is really where it's like, okay, honeymoon phase is over with the kids.
Yep.
And people start to see some of the challenges. And this is when they're like, oh Lord. So I think that really shows how important it is to make these things a habit, because when you just, even if you have the best intentions and you start strong at the beginning of the year, if it's not really baked into how you're moving and how you're running your classroom, it's going to be really difficult to sustain that for the rest of the year and get to what you need to get to curriculum wise. So absolutely.
So do you have like maybe a top three things like teachers should focus on incorporating in the classroom so that they are having that inclusivity?
Yeah. As far as like, and I'm using inclusion, and I know every district uses it differently, because sometimes inclusion means, you know, a classroom that's designed to include students that are like have different levels of ability. And so yes, that type of inclusion, but also the inclusion under the umbrella of like cultural responsiveness and making all students, whatever intersection of their identity that they're at, you know, whether that is, you know, their race, their gender, their language, all of those students feel welcomed and belonging. That's how I'm using inclusion as well. So three things that I think about, you know, when it comes to inclusion is just going back to what I said, starting with yourself, because mm-hmm. I think that despite our best intentions, and everyone has, you know, good intentions, it's true that we all have blind spots and biases. So I think being really curious about your blind spots and biases and really open with yourself is always the first step. And then I think about, you know, the next step, which would be like after you're kind of thinking about how you're showing up to the space, the next thing would just be really simple, like making your students feel represented, like they're seen in the classroom space. So that looks like different books, that looks like, you know, different guest speakers, celebrating different heritage months. And that's a great place to start, but that's not where you should stop. I see a lot of teachers that are like, oh, I'm inclusive, we did Black History Month, and that's a great place to start. But, you know, you want to dig a little bit deeper from there. And then I think the next thing that inclusion really could look like is making sure that there's a variety of stories, like multiple people and different stories and experiences get told and shared. And that includes in your curriculum, like in social studies, different stories being told, in ELA, different stories being told, and just kind of helping students see that the default kind of view that we have is just one story. That's not the normal or the average, that's just one story. And there's a million other stories out there. So I think just being mindful of like making sure different stories are represented. So just to, you know, to stamp that, that would be, you know, starting with yourself, with your own biases and blind spots. And you can do something like that by reading, you know, obviously I'm biased. You could read Rooted in Joy, my book, because we talk about that, but there's a lot of other resources that will help you through that work. And then just like representation in your books and your celebrations and your holidays, and then really bringing a diversity of stories into the classroom.
For sure. I know I thought it was really cool when the standard started incorporating, like, where are your families coming from? Where are they immigrating from? And having that kind of a social studies lesson where we could see that we had a lot in common, but also that we were from all over the place was kind of a neat starting point in my classroom, second grade. That was the year COVID hit, but it's a good start.
Yeah. And imagine how good it feels for a student to know that, like, their story and their family history is has a space at school. Like it has value enough that they're saying, we're going to take time and focus on this. That's really meaningful, because I think we send a lot of implicit messages about what we talk about in school, what we don't talk about in school. And what we talk about in school has like some inherent value. So when you bring in students' stories and their histories and their cultures, you're showing that like, not only is it like, you know, important that you know where you come from, it's important that we talk about it. And it has a place here in the classroom. So I think that can be really meaningful for our kids.
That's just so impactful. Just thinking about how much we really do have at our fingertips to set this standard for all the students. Like, that just gives me goosebumps.
Yes, I know. It's amazing when you think about how we can like shape the future, because we're building a kid's sense of self and value and, you know, giving them that critical lens. It's amazing. It can be overwhelming because you're like, oh, I've got so much to do, but it's really
Speaking of so much to do. So you're promising joy in the classroom, and yes. I'm sure a lot of listeners are like, it's impossible right now. I'm so stressed and overwhelmed. So I know reading your book is a great start, and working on some of those things and just reflection pieces, but how do we combat like all the different things thrown at us from our districts that we can't even control to be able to have this classroom that will really bring us joy and make us be able to do the work that we got into teaching to begin with?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. And I think that what I really wanted to be sensitive of is that this doesn't become like another thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's always a new idea or trend or fad in education. It's like, you got to do this. Like, we're doing flipped classroom. We're doing classroom makeovers. We're doing, you know, whatever it is. And it's not meant to be one more thing, because it's not just the practices, it's really the mindsets. So when you have a mindset that the classroom should be rooted in joy, it becomes really easy to, it doesn't become another thing to do, because everything that you're doing is informed by that understanding. So it's really about shifting your mindset to think about like, do kids deserve joy at school just as a baseline? You know, should kids feel excited and happy to be at school? And a lot of people are listening are like, of course they should. But then if you actually sit down and you think about our students' experience, you'll realize that like, they're not feeling joy at school.
Right.
School is not a joyful, happy, positive place for them to be. And so when we recognize like, oh, as much as we think that that should be the way that it is, that's not a lot of our kids' experience. I think it makes it easy to understand how it's really about a mindset shift. And that's really the first step, is enriching yourself in these reflective questions. And it can be so straightforward. It's just being curious, stopping, listening, taking a step back, and really thinking about like your day and the structure of your day and how you're showing up, and finding little ways to push back against a system that like is kind of designed to suck the joy out of school. But what I often tell teachers is so many folks are playing whack-a-mole with behavior. I call it playing whack-a-mole. Right? They're just kind of going around like responding. You're always in a responsive place. And of course you're getting burned out, because you're putting out fires, running around from here and there, ripping and running. And when you start to create a classroom community that's rooted in joy, and you start to incorporate these culture responsive and like joy building practices in your instruction, you're spending less time playing whack-a-mole. So while initially it might seem like another thing to learn and like a couple mindsets to shift, I found that teachers that I work with actually spend less time running around, and they're less frustrated, because the behavior, like let's name it, the behavior is one of the things that's definitely burning out our teachers the most. So they're spending less time responding to that behavior, because their classroom is rooted in joy and their kids are like, not those just behaviors just aren't coming up in the frequency and the scale that they were before. So it actually ends up being less work on teachers' end, for sure.
Do you suggest teachers doing things like the morning meeting style, or, I mean, is that kind of what you're thinking towards, how to bring all this together?
Yeah. So I think I really divide it into proactive and reactive strategies. And so the proactive strategies are really important. So that looks like morning meetings, that looks like community building, that looks like having a strong connection between school and home with like strong communication, and not just like a newsletter telling you what's going on in the classroom, but rather like a really strong like caregiver teacher team. Really, those proactive measures are the things that are keeping the keeping these behaviors, some of these behaviors at bay, because kids feel like they belong and they care about the classroom community. So they're just less likely to do things that disrupt the classroom community because they're a part of it. Like it's, we know what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So they're like, hey, I want to be in this classroom community and I want it to be, positive. So those proactive strategies look like community building on a consistent weekly, daily basis, look like having fun with your students, not just opportunities for your students to have fun. Because this is another thing I see a lot of teachers are like, oh, well, they're joyful, you know, they're doing this activity. The teacher needs to be in there with it. It actually changes our brain chemistry when we laugh and have fun with somebody. We feel closer and connected to them. So teachers creating those opportunities to feel closer and connected to their students, again, builds the community. And then you have your reactive strategies. And this is where the culturally responsive work comes in, the work that's really dismantling carceral practices in schools. And so what that looks like is moving away from like punishments and really reshifting your focus onto consequences, because punishments are really made to make kids feel bad about making a mistake. And a consequence is helping a kid learn from a mistake. Mm-hmm. And so in the book, I dive into consequences plus accountability. And that really provides kids with learning opportunities. And so when you have these proactive strategies, you have fewer behavior instances. And then when you move away from punishments and focus on consequences, you have more learning opportunities for students. And students are actually like improving, and it's taking a lot of the frustration and consternation out of behavior management. So it's not, behavior management isn't this like stressful thing where it's like you versus the student, like clashing, you know, back and forth, but rather like reshifting it. And that's where the kind of the secret of the joy comes in. And that's where teachers are having less burnout, because they're not in this rat race with the student chasing after the behavior. And they have all these proactive strategies. So the classroom is running smoother on a daily basis anyway.
So going along with so much to unpack there, but let's start first talking about the consequences. Because I know when we hear that, sometimes we're like, okay, well, you know, you spilled your lunch, you should mop it up. So is it that kind of in the moment thinking of a consequence, or would you have like some already in your back pocket ready to go?
I think having some in your back pocket is great. But I also encourage teachers that in the moment, you're not doing your best thinking. So what I see a lot with teachers is something happens and the teacher is responding to the incident, but also is emotionally dysregulated by the incident. And it's we're human. So that's not to say that it's wrong to be dysregulated, because of course you're going to be dysregulated. It's stressful. I mean, when a kid does something, it's like, you know, maybe I like to imagine you've got 10 minutes left of the class, or maybe you're being observed, you know, like there could be all kinds of stressors, right, that make it difficult for you to be in the moment with a student and do and really thinking about a good consequence that's not just a punishment. So the first thing I say is relieve yourself of the pressure to, you know, have the best response all of the time. And just know that it's okay to tell a student like, hey, I'm seeing this behavior, I'm acknowledging this behavior, and we're going to talk about it at another time. That's totally okay. So have some in your back pocket, but also don't put pressure on yourself to come up with this beautiful, well thought out consequence right in the moment, because it's probably not going to happen all the time.
Right. Now, what about the schools that, and I've seen this a lot in Facebooks recently, where, you know, they send him up to the office. He comes back with like candy and toys. And they're like, that kind of negates the whole process.
Yeah. 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 Those situations are interesting, right?
Because that seems to be happening more and more.
There's a lot going on there. And this is why it's because I'm going to say something that people are going to kind of be like, you know, a little angry about. Sometimes, now does it make sense? Now, I don't know about the candy, but I think sometimes people are really looking for like an immediate something to happen. And I think that is where the frustration comes out, because teachers are like, well, I sent them out of the class and they came back and nothing happened. And my kind of unpopular answer is, sometimes nothing is going to happen in that exact moment. I mean, it doesn't always make a lot of sense, because sometimes you need you need other stakeholders to be involved. Sometimes you need time to like think of something that's meaningful. So I think it's really hard for folks because they want an immediate reaction. But that's not always, if you think about like a well thought out consequence and like holding kids accountable in a really thoughtful way, I just don't know that a lot of even administrators have the bandwidth in that moment to do something really thoughtful. Right. So like the candy part, that I've seen that. I've never experienced that. I like see that a lot of times. And sometimes I'm like, is that like an urban legend or is that like really
But it's not.
I've never, you know, and I was a vice principal. And so I've never done that personally. I'm sure some that has happened somewhere. But what I do say is you do have to kind of release the expectation that it's always going to be right away. Now, I think there's a genuine concern, like if it's not happening at all. But I'll give you an example. Like if I have a student, who is in the classroom and is escalated, right? And the teacher is escalated and they're frustrated with each other. And I don't know what, let's say the student was, talking over the teacher, right? She's trying to explain ratios and he's talking over her. So the teacher sends the kid out of the class and maybe, you know, the teacher's worried because the kid starts like yelling or really kind of acting a little unhinged. And the teacher is like, okay, like we're not going to get anywhere with this. For a lot of teachers, the kid leaving the classroom is a break for them as much as it is for the kid, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you need a break because you're frustrated. The kid needs a break. But the reality is, you know, the kid is losing instructional minutes. So one thing that I really struggled with, and I'll be honest as an administrator, was like my goal was to send the kid back to class because you're explaining ratios and like he kind of really needs to know about proportional relationships to be able to, you know, succeed. So my thought process is like, okay, I need to de-escalate this kid as quickly as possible to get them back into the classroom. And I think it's just a question of are the lines of communication open? Because when I would do that, I would clarify with the teacher, like, right now, I need them not to be missing instructional time. So as long as they're not going to continue those behaviors, I'm sending them back. Now, I'm not sending them back and the kid's going to continue to turn up, right? Right. That's not helpful. But it could be that like, hey, I don't want them to be missing instructional minutes while I try to figure out something that's a consequence over a punishment. So I think I'd like to give both sides the benefit of the doubt there and say that like probably what's happening in those scenarios is teachers understandably need a break because they're escalated and they are not getting enough support. And when you're burnt out, right, you're going to need more frequent breaks. But then I'm also thinking that the administrator is probably like, I need to get this kid back in class as soon as possible because they're losing instructional minutes. So that is something where this is why I say it starts with mindset and it starts with the proactive measures. Because as a teacher, if you are not where you need to be emotionally, that's not going to feel like a good answer because you're going to be frustrated and still escalated. So not that that's only on the teacher, that's on the administrator to have a healthy adult culture. That's on the school to make sure that the teachers are being cared for, right? So there's so much that goes into it before that moment, but we end up so hyper-focused on this, the aftermath that we're not thinking of like, let's look at all the antecedents, you know, mm-hmm. let's look at what was happening before this. Maybe the teacher is sick, doesn't have any more sick days. So they're already on, you know, a little escalated and frustrated. And maybe that student didn't get breakfast this morning. And maybe the office is short staffed, so there's nobody to wait with the student, right? So there's so many things going on, I think, before that moment. And that's why I believe in rooting school communities in joy. Because in joyful, healthy school communities, that just happens a lot less. Mm-hmm. Because everybody is well and everybody is being taken care of.
That's true. My first school, I think, was the best school I taught at because it did have such an amazing culture. You wanted to stay late. You wanted to do after school things. And we were so tight knit that it's been really hard to find that since or even have it replicated.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about this a lot in the book, but yeah, it's the same, similar story. The first school I worked at was the best. I mean, it was like Disneyland and I didn't even know how great it was until I went.
Right.
To oh my God. Right. I was like, let me go back. But that school, sadly, it actually closed. But what I realized when I went from school, and I've seen a lot of schools now at this point across the country, when you have a healthy culture, a lot of this stuff doesn't even come up. You know, it's just a totally different conversation. And so sometimes when I'm working with teachers, I'm like, whoa, before I even talk to you about this particular student, I want to rewind all the way back. I want to talk to your principal. I want to sit in on a staff meeting. I want to see the curriculum. I want to see the schedule, because it's not just about this one student. It's a systemic issue that's like creating conditions where neither you, like the teacher's not thriving, and neither is the kid. So there can be a lot there.
And earlier you talked about the collaboration and the team of the parents and the teachers and the student. Unpopular opinion probably is you're not going to build that relationship by like just the one first positive phone call home. And then like you said, the weekly newsletters. So how do you kind of bridge that gap between what we've been taught and what we keep seeing as what we should be doing to a better system?
I think really the connections between schools and home is such an art form that we've almost lost a little bit, because I think both teams are very escalated, right? Because there's so much going on right now between home and school. There's like parents that are like, I don't want my kid learning about Martin Luther King. And like, and then there's teachers that are as overworked as teachers are, families are also overworked. I quote this a lot. I think I talked about it in the training, but the average family in California has less than an hour of family time between commutes and whatever going on and two jobs, less than an hour of family time a day. I mean, talk like, how are you having a thriving relationship with your child if you talk to them for less than 60 minutes a day? Come on. So I think there's so much going on, like with families and with teachers, that those two sides have to be really intentional about how they're communicating with each other. And it's really, a lot of it is up to the school leader and the school to set the tone. So I will say that. But then for teachers, I think I see a lot of teachers communicating to home. I see a lot of communication. Communication is not the same as like an understanding in a relationship. So I think it's important, to communicate, but the families also need to feel like they have a place in the classroom. And right now, unfortunately, the only families that feel like they have any say in the classroom are these like Moms for Liberty, super like random conservative families that don't want us to teach history, right? It's not the families that are, you know, well-intentioned that want to have a place. So I think about, how can we bring families into the classroom more? Like not just those loud families on Twitter at the school board meetings, but just the simple families, you know, that are in the car line just doing their best. Right. How can we make them feel a part of the school community instead of just the focus being on communicate. Like the teachers have the information, they're giving it out. That's just not enough. And then I just always invite teachers to have so much grace, because there's a lot of frustration. I'm in a group, you know, and the teachers were really understandably frustrated because this is early learning, right? Kinder. Veteran teacher's been teaching for 30 years, talking about how her kids don't come in with what they used to come in with. You know, she used to have a kinder back in the day. They'd come in, they knew their address, their mom and dad's names, you know, and kids these days just aren't knowing that. Mm-hmm. But then we talked about, like, let's just talk about how parenting has changed also, though. Like,
and who's the parent?
Right, exactly. Like, so it's changed a lot, you know, so it's not that surprising. So I think there just has to be more grace and understanding. And it's not going to be enough to just have a checklist of like things to communicate. It really takes some intention and some thought and somebody spearheading the work, that the intention is to have like a really deep, rich connection. And that doesn't happen overnight. And what I like to see in schools is somebody who, with a stipend, you know, make sure you pay this person, somebody with a stipend or somebody who's really leading that work. I've seen a lot of schools that have a model where there's one teacher that's like the lead, and they think of deeper and fun, more interesting ways to build those connections. And I think that really works, because it's not enough to just do what we've been doing. I mean, even since I first started teaching, like, you know, about like 10 or so years ago, even since then, it has changed a lot. So I know that, like, in that short period of time, what I used to do in year one with family communication is totally different than what I would do now. So it is changing, and we need some new solutions for how to face that challenge.
Right. Have you seen anything that's really successful? Like an example of, like, all that pops in my head are like donuts for dads, muffins for mom.
Yes.
And I know that's very exclusive of a lot of families.
I mean, coffee for caregivers, but yeah, or cake for caregivers, or I don't know, something like that. But yes, right. One thing that I love to do was I had a lot of families coming in talking about, like, they would, for Heritage Day, the families were running Heritage Day. They were giving presentations. They were talking about, you know, their stories. I had moms that came in and read to the kids in Spanish. Like, I had a mom, we read, one of my early years, we read Esperanza Rising. And, you know, there's a lot of Spanish in the book. And so I had a mom that did some of the read alouds in Spanish. And it was so cool because, you know, the kids were excited. Their mom was there in the classroom. And it was just an opportunity for them to see that, like, I see the inherent value in who they are outside the classroom. They don't have to leave that at the door. So I think, you know, whether it's career day or for heritage celebrations or just read alouds or room parents. And I understand a lot of teachers kind of are very protective and feel a little defensive of their classroom space. So, like, we don't want anybody in there, but I really invite you to, you know, really unpack that and realize that you're missing out on an opportunity to create a really close connection. So bringing families in academic and non-academic ways is huge. I have a whole workshop. I created this framework called MOPS, M-O-P-S. And it talks all about, you know, building connections with families because it is a skill. I mean, it's not something that necessarily we're learning in our teacher credentialing programs. The problem is our programs are not equipping us with enough to know how to teach students in an engaging way, run a classroom, communicate with our coworkers, communicate with our family. Like, we're just not learned. Like, there's no program that is preparing you to do that. It's impossible. You know, there's just not enough time. So I think one thing is too, is just recognizing, and I need more school leaders to recognize this as well. They've got to invest in, and I'm not talking about sit and get PD where you're just sitting there listening to someone talk, but they've got to invest in better coaching and support for their teachers because we're just not, you know, you're just not learning all of this stuff that you need to learn to be able to do this well, unfortunately.
Right. And that, I mean, that's perfect timing right now with the Hispanic month is bringing in some of those families for sure. Like, I don't know why I didn't even think about that, but I've brought in families before for what we call secret reader. So it's just a random time during the school year. Like, it's not tied to any kind of celebration, but just having parents come in and read and no one knows who's coming until they come. And then they read a story and that's always fun. But tying it to something like that would be really cool to see too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and a lot of times they bring in food. Oh, it's delicious. Like, it's a win-win. Everybody's happy.
Right. I think that when I taught overseas and they did that with like pre-K, like they had these huge celebrations where they had all kinds of food from different cultures and you got to experience that. And it was like a cultural awareness day. It was really fun. But here they're so like food. Oh, no, can't bring that.
I know. So some schools are just, but that's, I mean, I don't know, maybe you didn't experience this, but when I think back to when I was a kid, some of the best memories I had were like my mom brought in soul food for everybody one time. And that was like really cool. Like, there's just so many things that we used to be able to do. And I understand safety and I understand allergies, you know, whatever, I get it. But so many of the joyful things because of like litigious environments or because of like district policies, like, have been taken out. And that's exactly why we're in this mess, because we took all of the fun little things. And then we took a lot of fun little things away during COVID and no one's bothered to bring them back. And it's like, we gotta, you know, I'm not minimizing the dangers of COVID, but we need to bring some of those fun little things back because that's what made it a school. That was bringing the community. So we're definitely missing that stuff.
And the memories, like you said, it gets those students really wanting to come to school. It gets the teachers excited to share those kind of things. So it kind of comes full circle for sure. Hopefully we can turn it around. I mean, education's always kind of going back around in a cycle again. So
pendulum swing for sure. Yeah, I think we will. And it just takes, you know, and there are big problems, but they can be chipped away at in little ways in individual classrooms. So I feel like, you know, there's a lot of teachers that can really start to do that work in their classroom. And so I don't want teachers to listen to this and feel overwhelmed and, you know, doomsday, because it's not, you know, there's a lot of little ways that we can push back and bring that back in our own classrooms. Like, we have a lot of agency. So that's what I'm trying to do with this book, is help people feel like they can do it in their own little classrooms and start to build a movement, start to build a revolution.
Hopefully, like you said, they can find small ways to feel kind of triumphant and bring that joy back inside their classroom. That's not necessarily going against the entire grain of what their government's expecting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Little ways.
Before we wrap up, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you're really wanting to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. Just that, you know, this work is, I hope people, when you read the book, you feel excited and not overwhelmed, that people feel like they can do this, that they feel empowered and encouraged, because it is a lot to conceptualize, but that's what we do. We take these like big concepts and ideas and we boil it down. Like, we teach algebra to third graders. Like, so we can do this. We can make it really tangible and sticky. And so I'm excited, you know, for teachers to dig into it. And if, you know, if you're not already following me on social media, I do have tons of tips all day, every day, and strategies, because this is, you know, this is my passion. This is what I love to do. So I love working with people and being in the trenches with teachers through this, because I just so deeply believe in this work I believe in, you know, in our profession. So.
And it's definitely needed. And I am so glad that you're out there doing that work for us so we can discover you. And so your book is on Amazon, right? I think I saw it on there.
It is. It's on Amazon.
Very exciting.
Yes.
So Rooted in Joy. I'll make sure I link it in the show notes. Where else can people find you?
Yeah. So follow me on Instagram. It's just my name, Deonna Smith, DEONNASMITH. And then you can also check out my website. So I wrote the book, obviously, and I work with, you know, I go to like conferences and stuff, but I also work with schools. I do like small group teacher coaching and professional developments, you know, not, this could have been an email professional developments, but exciting and fun ones where we really dig in. So I would love to potentially work with you and come to your school. And like I said, check out the information there. And I also have a YouTube channel where I share free teaching tips, and it's called That's Just Good Teaching. And so that's another one of my fun little projects. I love just like, you know, quick, easy little ideas. You know, here's something to consider, something that you can use in your classroom. So check that out.
Thank you so much for this important conversation today. And hopefully we'll reconnect again in the future.
Awesome. Yes. Thanks, y'all. And if you read the book, make sure you drop me a DM and tell me what you think.
For sure. Okay. Don't forget to get those in the show notes. If you've loved this show, then join me in sharing the teaching,
hitting that subscribe button,
and leaving us a review on
iTunes,
so we can be found by more teachers like you who are ready to start sharing the workload. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Find new episodes each week on shareteaching.com.
Thanks for listening to the Share Teaching Podcast.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, wait. That's right. Is that right? Okay. Let me try that again. Author of Rooted in Joy.